Welcome back to Coffee with Innovate Finance, a podcast series where we're speaking with experts from the industry on the changing face of financial services and the future of fintech and financial innovation. I am Rashi Pandey, Head of Membership and Growth, and I'm very pleased to welcome Matt Miggins, who's the founder and CEO of Hyperjar. So Hyperjar is a money management platform that builds digital bridges between people and businesses. So thank you so much for joining us today, Matt.
Thank you for having me. Happy to be here.
Thank you. So diving right in, can you tell us a little bit about your background and how you came into the fintech industry?
Yeah, so briefly, I'm from Canada. I moved to the UK about 15 years ago, and I came here to become a fixed income investment banker. Prior to that, I was an electrical engineer, so I had a technical background, did a career switch into finance. So I had this banking career in London, and basically, throughout my career in finance, I came across an idea that is now Hyperjar. What my idea at the time is not what Hyperjar is today, but that idea was something that prompted me to basically decide to leave my work and essentially go for full-time entrepreneurship. But basically, it was a fixed income job that inspired Hyperjar.
Perfect. That sounds great. So can you please explain Hyperjar's core propositions and what problems are you trying to solve? As you said, the way you started, it's kind of evolved, right?
Yeah. So Hyperjar at its core is an app to try to help the typical consumer in the UK or eventually around the world spend their money better, deploy their money better. So you have lots of services that, you know, banks, for example, hold your deposits. They're great at providing you loans. There's lots of apps that even help you maybe invest and save, but nothing really helps you to spend your everyday money in a really, we think, in a really smart way that works with your life. And your life is often very social. You have children, you may have flatmates, a partner. So we built tools to help people spend money better, because when you spend money better, you eventually have more money. And when you have more money, you can do better things with it, whether that's invest, whether that's a down payment for a house, whether it's have a nicer vacation. So it's a tool to help people to spend better. And with that, we built an app and we built a payment card that's connected to the app. And I mentioned before your introduction, you mentioned how it connects a digital bridge between consumers and retailers effectively. So obviously there's a business model around it. The app has to be able to make money. It has to be able to sustain itself. And when we think about how helping people to spend money better, obviously they spend money on shops and services. So we try to bring those entities into our ecosystem. And in the end, by doing that well, we give people better value, better deals, and the shops get better loyalty, better customers. And the original inspiration was around working capital. So it was a proposition to give businesses working capital, and it's pivoted more to be about, I'd say, acquisition loyalty on the consumer, on the retail side. And there is still a working capital angle, but that's more of a secondary effect.
That's pretty cool, actually. So I know you, like you said, you know, you guys are big on helping people save and help people managing their finances. Can you perhaps talk us through some success stories?
Yeah, so it's because it's a very broad proposition, but we did a couple of features which attracted certain demographics. So we launched for example, a kids card. And it was just a secondary feature of our core app, which is sort of visual saving jars. And so we got a lot of customers coming on for their children to give their children a pocket money card. And what we've seen is happening more and more is someone brings their child on, give them some money management for their child. It's very convenient for the parent. But then the parent starts to use the app themselves. And actually, this is quite, you know, it's quite good for my kid, but actually it's good for me because I'm actually now setting my money aside. I'm starting this budget in a way that I've never budgeted before. And we're seeing many of these use cases now where you have these parents trying to get just for the kid, thinking they wouldn't even use Hyperjar, becoming budgeters with Hyperjar. And this trend has only grown, especially in the past 3 months, 3 to 4 months, since there was a bit of that tech correction. And obviously, as inflation becomes a daily topic, our proposition is becoming very top of mind for the consumers coming on to us. And I also wanted to say the demographic that we have as customers, it's not a typical fintech demographic. It's not say like a Southeast London, 20 something university graduate, early adopter, it's very much a working class, middle class, often a parent. It skews heavily female, and it's very representative of sort of like the population, which is quite exciting for us. So we're getting the typical average person who may not be an early tech adopter using our app and finance, actually helping them actually change their lives in a positive way, because they're now getting this control over their money, whereas before they never really felt they had that control.
So you do, you did mention budgeting, quite a few times, and I believe you guys help people become savvy budgeters, as you mentioned. So what tools do you use to measure how people are saving? And are there any interesting insights and trends you can share with us? Like you said, the last 3 months you were seeing it grow. What else?
Yeah, so we are, it's like a visual money management system, like envelope budgeting or jam jar budgeting. So we essentially measure our success by, first of all, you have customers coming on to our proposition, because it's a fairly focused proposition. It's about helping you to try to manage your money visually. So the first metric is how many people are coming on to HyperJar. And at the moment, we're about 700 people a day sign up to HyperJar. And this is without any focused marketing activity. It's organic, word of mouth, we have some PR. And that's the first metric. So we have the people coming on to HyperJar. And then the second thing we measure is how people are using their app. So the features we've built are specifically designed to help you budget better visually. So we look at how many jars are being created, the names of those jars, how people are setting aside money in those jars. Also, we allow people to share their jars, so are people sharing jars, and we allow people to connect shops specifically to jars, so are people linking shops to jars, because this is sort of automating your budget. So all those trends have been increasing. Again, it's been a more marked increase in the past 3 months, but we have almost 400,000 customers. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but the number of jars being created is, the average jar per customer is around four to five jars. We've seen an increase in certain jar names. So Christmas is the most popular. So people are clearly planning for Christmas, which is great to see. So they're thinking about this now versus having a big credit card bill in January. So trying to set aside money. We're seeing increase in jar names for holiday, for wedding, for house. So some of these bigger purchases are starting to appear in the jar list, whereas before it was much more about, say, Jimmy's pocket money and very small incidental things. And now it's becoming much more about medium and longer term goals within the jar names themselves.
I like how you're saying jars, because that's making me want to put these jars away as well. So you also recently published a blog on the 10 realistic methods to stop spending and start saving money in 2022. And like you said, the tech correction with the rising, cost of living, inflation, etc. Can you share a brief summary to our listeners on how we can achieve the two?
Yeah, so I won't necessarily go through the full blog. It was 10 steps, but what I will say is it's a few simple methods that then play themselves out in many of these tips. But the first thing is, it's about becoming aware of your money and having a sense of where you want to go with your money. So it's a simple matter of setting goals, which, by the way, I like to use sort of health and fitness as a bit of an analogy in terms of how we approach finances. So just like with health and fitness, you want to try and create good habits. And to create those good habits can have lifelong positive effects. But to create a good habit, it's got to be something that you can actually keep with it. You're not going to burn out after a week or two. It's got to be sustainable, and it's got to feel somewhat enjoyable. Now, obviously, things that are good for you typically don't feel great, and that's why they're hard to do. It's just for some maxim in life. But with money, so the first thing we feel is, get a sense of some goal, because a goal gives you a sense of excitement about the future. And that will help encourage you to not focus on the near term dopamine rush from, say, spending money impulsively. So have that goal. Once you have that goal or number of goals, you then get a sense of my picture today. And again, that's the next big step. Get a sense of what my money is like today, how much I'm spending on, because often we find that people aren't aware of where their money actually goes. don't know the big expenses, don't know if they have a say mortgage or car payment, but maybe the coffee shop visits maybe add up more often than you think. I mean, actually set some time aside, you realize, you know what, over a month that adds up. So getting a sense of your daily spend, getting a sense of where you want to go, you can then start to create a bit of a plan. And that plan usually involves some kind of a short-term thing, like say today, I'm going to try to only have one coffee, for example, Or this week, I'm going to try to make myself for 3 days of the week. And then once you start to do these little things, you then start to see you'll see a result from it. Just like with fitness, when you start to stick with it for a little bit and you see a little bit of a result that gives you some excitement, some motivation, and encourages you to do more of that. So with those little simple philosophies, it's about trying to build a system to create sustainable habits for you. And the important thing I want to mention also is everyone's different. So your habits, your tendencies will be very different from mine. There's no one size fits all system. However, almost everyone can benefit from having more awareness of their current financial situation, of having goals, medium, long-term goals. And then once you have those two fundamental pieces, you then create the system that works for you. One other piece I like to say to help with this is try to have a social circle that aligns with these goals. Again, with health and fitness, if you want to try to drink less, for example, if all your friends go out drinking and they're heavy drinkers, it makes it very difficult to achieve that goal. So you want to try to find friends who maybe don't drink as much, or they can have a good time without drinking. It allows you to sort of achieve that goal. Same with money. So if you have friends who like to go out and, you know, shopping binge on the weekends, and you sort of feel left out because you don't want to spend it, it becomes sort of hard. And if you can find, you don't have to like drop your friends, but try to find people who align with what your goals are. And then you can find yourself feeling less anxiety, less stress, and you can start to then achieve those goals more easily. So it's almost like a money buddy system. It could be a family member. It could be just a close friend. You don't need to have everybody, but just one or two can make a big impact to help ensure that you're on track, even to try and talk about it. So if you talk about it, it helps you also to, again, achieve that goal because you have a bit of a pressure. So I verbalize this goal. I don't want to disappoint this person. And it helps to give you a bit of motivation to not slip up. So I'd say those are probably the biggest factors. And like I said, it varies per person, but if you do those things, you'll be far ahead of the game.
I was going to say, those are great pointers, actually. And I think I can apply a lot of them as well. You do not realize sometimes the expenses that just add up, and it's probably just a couple of pounds here and there. And then you have a huge bill at the end of it. So thank you. Thank you for sharing those. So what else in terms of trends are you seeing in the way people managing their finances, as the spending habits of consumers and retailers have become so in trend, if I may say, with buy now, pay later, and especially with the cost of living crisis right now?
Yeah, so again, we've seen a very drastic change in behavior and patterns in the past few months, again, prompted by, I think, mostly the cost of living crisis and inflation, because that's headline news and it affects everybody because of everyone uses energy, and that's probably the biggest headline topic. So with that constant media focus, what we've seen is before we saw almost a pattern where a buy now, pay later proposition, people wouldn't think twice about that. A significant portion of people wouldn't think twice about that, which is something that you do as part of your routine. You want to say buy these shoes, you can sort of do payments. Whereas what we're seeing now is people are now starting to think twice, because they're now thinking there's a greater amount of anxiety with the finances. So if I do that, well, then I have to deal with that down the road. And I also have this other thing I'm worried about with in terms of my energy bill. So it's a bit almost like a reflection happening with spend that we're seeing this in terms of usage, just in terms of usage of these products. We're seeing it in terms of people coming onto our product, specifically saying, I need something to help me get control over my spending. So I'd say broadly speaking, I'd say there's been a lot more thinking before people purchase. People are now starting to think twice. So I think consumption is starting to be questioned a lot more. It was fairly carefree not too long ago. Now it's becoming more so. People are just really thinking. And then people still want to live life, obviously. You know, life hasn't stopped. It's been an interesting few years with COVID, and people are now saying, hey, I can sort of travel, I can enjoy things a bit more. So I think people are still wanting to do these more bigger goals, but now focus on those a bit more. People are like, okay, I want to go on that holiday. It's maybe going to cut back on maybe on eating out or on some things that I don't need to have this thing today. So those little decisions are starting to be affected. Like that's what we're seeing certainly with our customer base, more of a shift to thoughtfulness around spend, which is, you know, frankly, it's benefiting Hyperjar just because our app is all about helping people to slow down it a little bit with money, not try and be so impulsive. I'm not sure if you know the movie, There's Something About Mary, but there's a scene in this movie where a bit of a crazy guy talks about 7-minute abs. So he's got this great idea, 7-minute abs, because the previous thing was 8-minute abs. So you know, you can do it, get it down to 7-minute abs. And I think what had happened is we had all these apps and services trying to make everything faster, okay. faster, easier. In fact, you know, a bit of a funny analogy is the company Fast, which went insolvent in the US, it was trying to make the checkout payment even faster, you know, $100 million to make it even faster. Mm. And Frank, I don't really have any issue checking out. You know, it's not that slow. So there was a weird obsession with making everything faster and more frictionless and easier. And I think what's happened now is like, let's slow down. Let's think about our money, what we want to do with our money, because that friction, a little bit of friction is actually quite useful. So I think that shift is starting to happen. I think it's only going to increase over the next year, in my opinion.
I think the fact that you said, you know, becoming thoughtful spenders, I actually think that's a positive shift as well, you know, in spending habits. And very happy that you guys are helping people do that, you know, slow down. I think COVID, if it taught us anything, that was definitely one of the key takeaways, to slow down at the end of the day. You know, moving on to kids as well, since you also have a free prepaid debit card and app for kids aged, I believe, you know, 6+. So how does that work and how's that slightly different?
Yeah, so yeah, we have a free Pocket Money card, as you're correct, and age six plus. The way it works is the parent has to have an app, has to be a customer. They can then add children to their app. It's free. The child will get their own MasterCard, Hyperjar MasterCard, prepaid debit card. And if they have a phone with a mobile number at the moment, is required, they can have their own app. And that way the child can have their own savings jars. The parent can put money into the jars and the child can effectively spend from them, save from them. And it's an extension of what Hyperjar is. So Hyperjar is trying to let people manage their money visually. And to manage your money often involves, as I mentioned, social situations. So when I spend money, it's not just me. I often spend it with friends and family. And as we thought about that, we realized that for a lot of parents, children is a major component of how they spend, a major component of their budget. So we just extended the product to allow children. And that was a natural extension of what Hyperjar is. It's proved to be very popular. And what also we love about what we've done here and what seemed to be very popular is the same app that the parent gets is basically what the child gets. There's some differences in terms of being able to like make, say, payments out to sort codes and account numbers. But for the most part, the money management tools are the same. And what we've realized is like money management is very universal. And that 6-year-old child can learn habits that will help them when they're in their 40s. And these same principles about seeing your money, being aware, having a sense of what is there, because with contactless, it's almost hard to know what money's like. Like with I have 4 children. So with my 6-year-old, for example, she loves, you know, notes and coins, and it gives her a sense of what it is, whereas a digital doesn't mean anything to her. So I can see why it's harder to teach children about money if it's all digital. But with Hyperjar, with the jars, there's a number, there's a goal. Kids already start to get a sense of what that means and what it means. You might have one called new bicycle. It might have a goal of 100 pounds. Sure. And they start to get a sense of the number needs to get there. So you know, really, it's just an extension of what Hyperjar is, and the principles are universal. It's proved to be extremely popular, and as a child goes older, it can convert into an adult account. We've never positioned Hyperjar as a competition with a bank. It's a complement to a bank. We think banks do a fantastic job at holding deposits, fantastic job at providing things like mortgages and different lending products, but we don't think they do a fantastic job at helping you to spend that money in a coherent, controlled way. That's, we feel we do a great job at that. So it's just a tool, another tool in your sort of financial arsenal to try to help you be better with your money.
Perfect. That's really good. That's really good. So I also know you guys, you know, Hyperjar is very useful when you're traveling, especially with friends. So can you share with our listeners how they can use Hyperjar as a travel companion?
Yeah. So again, because we're focused on helping you to spend your money better, the features that we have when you travel are almost exactly aligned with that. So first is there are no FX commissions or fees. So the rate you pay on Hyperjar is MasterCard's best rate, which is, if you were to research it, it's effectively the best rate that you could get doing any kind of currency conversion. So no, not just no commission or fees, but also the spread that you charge is the best spread. And that's sometimes firms will trick you. They say no fees, but then they charge a really poor exchange rate effectively. So the best exchange rate that you can effectively get, that's the first thing. The second thing is, because you can often travel in groups, we have jars that you can share. So say we were to travel and say a group of adults were traveling to Ibiza and they want to go to buy some drinks. They could have a jar called Ibiza. They could all put money in there and then one person can go and buy a round and it will deduct from that single jar. So it's like a bill reconciliation thing, but it's done in real time. And every person on the trip will see who spent the money. And every person can also basically visualize what's happening and contribute. And anyone can spend with their own card. So any of these social spending situations become really easy to manage. And post-trip becomes very easy to manage because you can look at every transaction, see who spent what, and you don't have to input anything. It just will be a real-time ledger as you spend. And then lastly, in terms of security and protection, if you lose your card, you have things like freezing, which is fairly common with neobank things. But because it's not your core banking app, for example, if you were to lose it and be worried about it, because the nature of Hyperjar, money divided into jars, it's very hard to, for example, steal the money and spend the money, even with contactless, because if you configure it correctly, someone would have to link the jar to the card. And until they do, the money will be locked away effectively. So it becomes a very secure way of traveling with money and you don't have to worry about your bank account getting drained. I think all those reasons, it's been quite popular when people do travel and they bring their Hyperjar card with them.
Perfect. So you guys, you know, targeting, you know, people with saving money, you know, control spending, travel companion for children. So there's a lot that you guys are doing. So that's wonderful. But let's come back to the fintech sector as a whole. You know, where do you see the industry going over the next few years?
Yeah, as I mentioned before, there was a real emphasis on speed and everything faster. And you had a lot of propositions, for example, within fintech, that were, say, based around lending. There's easier ways to borrow, especially for the consumer. So lots of ways to borrow, lots of buy now, pay later, and many buy now, pay later competitors, not just one, but there would be, you know, many, many, many in different sectors. So what I've observed, so again, my background was fixed income professionally. So I was at Morgan Stanley, I was working fixed income. And what I've seen in terms of fintech propositions on lending, there wasn't much innovation in terms of, say, the underwriting and how a loan is given to someone. Maybe there was innovation in terms of the ease of getting credit, but the underwriting was often worse. So effectively what that means is a lot of fintechs have greater credit defaults than the traditional banks. And what we've learned is the banks are actually really good at lending. And lending is very hard. It's a hard thing to do. It's very difficult to lend. There's a real science, you know, art and science to it. And the fintechs haven't necessarily improved upon that. And I think what's going to happen is going to be more of, a reversion back to banks focusing on what they're good at, which is lending. They might improve more technology. However, in terms of fintech, where I see a real opportunity and gap, I feel the actual credit models and underwriting aren't great. So there's a bit of a few players control the credit scoring. You have a few major players who take all the data and they provide the credit scores that lenders use to provide loans. from firsthand experience, because I'm an expat, the models are extremely broken. I don't think they've evolved to this new age of work. So not like in the old days where you might have a job for 10, 15, 20 years, people can shift jobs with a year. And there are a lot of factors in terms of how it is today, which doesn't mean you're poor credit, but which the models will say you're a poor credit. It hasn't caught up, it hasn't kept up with how fast evolving society is. So I believe there's a real opportunity to innovate in terms of how you assess someone's credit worthiness. Not having to, for example, take out a credit card and have them spend and only use a certain amount, pay it down, and all these like silly rules to ensure you can access, say, a mortgage one day. I believe that there's going to be other factors and patterns that can be used to determine if someone should be able to get a mortgage. And I think that's a major area for opportunity, because I think that's important, important for people to access. Again, even though Hyperjar tries to discourage the use of credit for consumption, credit for investment and for big life purchases is important in our society. And I think that's there needs to be more access there. So I'd say that's going to be a big area. And I would say, like I said, a convergence towards banks still being strong in what they do, and less of this sort of speed, and more about how can we actually help the average person become better off in terms of finance. Like, it's just more of a rethink about that, and just to find something faster isn't necessarily good for society or for that person. What can we do to help people be better off as far as finance is concerned?
No, thank you. Thank you for your thoughts on that front. And, you know, of course, you are a fintech founder and CEO. So I'm going to ask, if there was one piece of advice you would give to a fintech founder right now, what would it be?
I think, so I'm an older fintech founder in my late 40s. And one thing I would say is, for me, I think it's very important that you have to be completely 100% focused on your goal. No backups. So I think if you have a backup plan, the odds of success go down drastically, just because there are so many things that come up that you will not expect, and so many problems that need to be solved. And the more committed you are to solving them, I believe then you will be able to solve them. So I think that commitment will then lead to persistence, which will then lead to success. And I think if you do have any kind of backups, which sounds scary, but I think it's almost, you know, almost becomes fulfilling. And that failure is more likely, because you're almost not going to do the hard work or the effort to solve the problem that will inevitably come up. So I'd say that's probably my biggest piece of advice. If you really want to do it, then really do it, because it isn't easy. But that said, it's extremely rewarding, and it's the best thing I've ever done. So I do recommend it, but you have to be ready for it.
That's very well said. Very well said. So for all fintech founders listening, there you go. So before I let you go, Matt, you know, I just want to ask, and before we close, what's next for you and Hyperjar? And is there any exciting news you can share with us?
So we've been really building out the basic money management app side of Hyperjar. And the retailer side we've been in the background building up functionality there. So the exciting thing happening next with Hyperjar is we're going to have a very exciting and innovative rewards engine, I call it. So imagine you go to shop with your cards. There'll be all sorts of incentives built into the app to effectively give you value or incentives or offers on your shopping, but in a way that's completely integrated into the app and the cards. So you just go and spend, and the value applies. So that's one thing. And again, it's actually quite innovative. It's hard to describe right now, but that's gonna be a big change in the next probably 6 to 8 weeks that'll be released. And then the other big thing is, if you think of say a gift card, a gift voucher, we've sort of built this in the current app, but we're gonna supercharge this functionality. But effectively, we will have the ability to do gifting to any retailer shop in the country. But the gifting, again, will have no credit risk like a typical gift card, no expiration. It'll have the ability to grow in value potentially, like a savings account. And it's just automatically redeemed by using my Hyperjar MasterCard. So this completely integrated, seamless gifting experience for any retailer, which, you know, you can imagine how children may love that, how, you know, for birthday presents, but even just for budgeting, the ability to set aside for a specific purpose with shops and not have to worry about losing it, and to get some incentive on top of it because there's value to the retailer. So this trying to integrate all of this into just using my prepaid debit card. And those are coming very soon, which I think is going to change the budgeting game entirely, because it's going to be incentivized budgeting effectively. In terms of other, you know, we do have some big brands that we're speaking with. I can't share the names, but there will be some big brands revealed soon that are going to be on Hyperjar to make this all, again, come together seamlessly, so that, you know, you as a customer can hopefully budget better and be paid to budget effectively.
I'm looking forward to receiving those new names. That's very, very exciting, Matt. Thank you so much for speaking with us today.
No, thank you for having me. I enjoyed it.
No, it was great to learn more about, you know, Hyperjar, and more power to you and to the team. So thank you once again for tuning into Coffee with Innovate Finance, to all our listeners. And do look out for upcoming episodes and follow us on Twitter and LinkedIn for more on our events and programs. And as always, until next time, take very good care of yourselves.